Hello, everybody. This is Paul Boyer. You're listening to The Mad Money Machine, episode 167, for Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day, 2009. Coming up on this episode, we'll talk about Jim Cramer's ratings. Shocker. We will talk about the state of the markets. And we'll talk about why golf is like investing and why investing is like golf. Let us spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. I'll pull something out of the tool crib and a whole lot more on the Mad Money Machine. CNBC viewership plunges 50% in October. 50%. If anyone wants to know why CNBC anchors are so pale and nervous these days, look no further. As Comcast CEO Brian Roberts considers what to keep and what to, well, cut, post his digestion of NBC Universal, assuming deal rumors are true, naturally, his eyes likely cast casual, nervous glances at Nielsen reports of CNBC viewership. Yet his nervousness is quite minor compared to what actual employees must be feeling after Nielsen reported a 50% plunge in CNBC viewership in October, year over year. Specifically, CNBC has experienced a massive 52% decline in overall viewers during business day hours, that's 5 a.m. to 7 p.m., and not much better, 49% drop in its demographic, 25 to 54-year-olds, in the month of October as compared to last year. Specific shows that are likely to follow the fate of Dennis Neal's recently canceled 8 p.m. gobbledygook are likely The Kudlow Report and Mad Money, which are down 59 and 56%. Respectively. While one can speculate about the causes of the drop, call it readers who can read between the propaganda teleprompter lines, one thing the drop does explain is why CNBC has had to recently resort to advertising products for incontinence, among other bodily malfunctions. As always, Zero Hedge wishes the network a speedy recovery and a return to what it does best: reporting the news without bias, without propaganda, and without an agenda. Once that happens, CNBC and its new, old owners may be surprised at how quickly its ratings will return to normal. Well, now, wait a minute here. So year-over-year ratings are down 59%, but you have to realize what was going on a year ago was the massive market tumult. Big precipitous declines in the market. People were probably tuning in to try to get a sense of why is the market crashing? Why did my 401k go down 20%? And so this year, you know, it's really kind of boring. Things aren't happening as much. I mean, since March 9th, the S&P is up 50%. If you were wise enough to plow all your money back into the market on March 9th instead of selling everything on March 9th, then you're happy. And you don't need to watch CNBC for that. I'll have a link to this report and a chart listing the various shows and time slots and demographics and actual numbers according to Nielsen ratings on the CNBC decline. the stock market itself seems to be one gigantic blob that moves synchronously all over the globe. You're looking at Asia, you're looking at Europe, you're looking at the United States, and then Asia, Europe, United States, and the markets go up and down like a wave in the ocean. They all rise, they all fall, more or less synchronously these days. And what is causing the move in the equity markets, whether it's up or down? It's got to be something bigger. It's got to be something macro. It's got to be a macroeconomic phenomenon. My guess is it has something to do with liquidity in general of large corporations, large banks, massive government bailouts, needing to find a home somewhere, whether they buy treasuries or where they buy equities or, bonds in general, or metals, precious metals. So there you have it. I wonder, I don't necessarily agree too with the zero hedge conclusion that they'll cancel Mad Money or Kudlow Report, because if you look at the chart, all of the shows on CNBC, the entire network is down. And so why would they pick any one particular show to cancel? I would think Mad Money continues to do well for them. So investing is like golf, and I've been doing a lot of golf. This is probably the most golf I've done in a single year in my life. I've golfed in, I've played 13 rounds of tournament golf. I've played in golf leagues, and I've played weekly matches, and I've done a lot of practicing. Don't seem to be getting any better. Not... With all the play, I don't seem to be any better in scoring by the end of the year than I was at the beginning of the year. With new clubs and new golf bag and new equipment and just new outlook on the game, still can't get the scores down in the low 80s. I'm typically a high 80s golfer. I guess my handicap at this point is 12.5, which is just perhaps a little bit a shade less than the average golfer in the United States' handicap, something like 16, I think. Well, spending all that time on the golf course, I think about golf as it relates to investing. And one of the things that that I came upon out on the hole, I think waiting for the foursome in front of me to move along, was in trying to shoot par on a golf course, it's about the same concept as trying to match a benchmark in investing. So a benchmark equates to par. And while it's often difficult to score a par on a hole, it's also can be difficult to score a par in investing, to match a benchmark in investing. Benchmark being perhaps the group of large cap stocks. You know, if you're trying to pick stocks yourself, or if you're trying to hire a manager to pick stocks for you, you're trying to shoot par or better. You're trying to get a birdie. You're trying to do better than par in your investing scenario. When, of course, the easiest way to go about shooting par in investing is to just buy the indexes, buy the benchmarks themselves, buy the low-cost funds that allow you to just sit back and easily shoot par. A par-making machine, what that would be. All right, the second analogy that I have with investing and with in golf is that if you're playing the options market in the stock, in equities, if you're trying to buy puts or calls on stocks, you have to be right about two things. You have to be right about the magnitude. So if you think a stock is going to go up or down, you have to be right in that direction. So if you're buying a call, you're betting that the stock is going to go up to match that stock's option price. And you have to be right about the time duration as well. So if you buy calls for this coming January and this at a price of a dollar more per share, you have to be right about both the dollar and the time. Now, same is true in investing. In golf, the same is true in golf. It's like putting. You have to be right about the direction. You know, is it left breaking or right breaking? And you have to be right about the speed or the magnitude of effort you have to put into the stroke. So you have to get the line right, and you have to get the force applied to the ball right in investing. So, and it's coincidental that one of the options is called a putt, and one of the shots in golf is called a putt. Well, in golf, they limit you to 14 clubs, and I don't know of a professional golfer that takes less than 14 clubs in their bag. I would assume that every professional golfer always has 14 clubs in their bag, and I bet they wish they could take more. You know, a couple of different drivers, maybe 3-wood, 5-wood, 7-wood, then some hybrids, and then a 1-2-3 iron all the way down to 9-iron pitching wedge, and then maybe a 52-degree wedge, a 56-degree wedge, a 60-degree wedge, and a 64-degree wedge, and a couple of putters. And so you're up to something like 20 clubs. So in golf, you want to have as many clubs as you can. And in investing, you want to have as many different assets as you can. And as far as I know, there is no limit. There's no limit to 14 investments that you can make, although you're probably limited by the number of things you can keep track of. And so one of the good ways to keep track of a lot of different investments is to buy a fund that does that for you. Buy a world market equity fund, a world market bond fund, have some money in a money market fund, and then maybe buy a precious metals fund. Would be a good way to diversify across a lot of different asset classes. And the last analogy I'll have for you between golf and investing this time is in golf and in the commercials, you see advertisements for the longest ball. Pinnacle, the longest ball. Top Flight, long and straight. You know, Titleist Pro V1, long and soft. So all golf balls advertise how long they are. The same is true in investing. The mutual funds advertise what great performance they'll get, how high they've risen in the past. And so you have to take golf ball advertisements with a grain of salt, and you have to take investing advertisements with a grain of salt as well. The golf balls are actually limited by USGA rules. They cannot fly beyond a certain point, given a certain amount of force applied to the ball. As far as I know it, there aren't any rules that govern the gains that can be had in mutual funds other than the expenses that you might pay in a fund. They will provide drag on the investment, limiting your performance over the long term. So golf is like investing, and investing is like golf. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, instead of a specific tool this time, I want to just tell you about the charts that I look at most frequently. When I wake up in the morning, the first thing I turn to is my iPhone, and I bring up Bloomberg on the iPhone. And then I look at the markets. I bring up the equity markets, including what happened in Asia and what happened in Europe. It generally correlates with what either what happened in the United States the day before or what is going to happen in the United States perhaps today. Of course, the prediction about the future is a whole lot less accurate than the correlation with the past, I find. But so I'll look at just in general, I'll look at the percentage change of markets from Europe, like the BE 500 or the Stocks or the FTSE 100 or the CAC 40, and I'll look at the percentage change of Asia Pacific, like the Nikkei or the Hang Seng or the CSI 300. And basically, I'm just looking to see if they're in the red or if they're in the green. Markets gone down overnight or have they gone up overnight? And it just gives me a sense of where the market, the equity market, is going. Then the next thing I click on my iPhone is the Kitco Gold Live application. And that is my look at the equity, at the rather precious metals market. And I bring that up right now. At the moment, gold is at 1,084. That is an all-time high for gold. Silver's at 1,721. That's not an all-time high. But gold had quite a rally in the past couple of days, so I'll look at the metals. And then on my computer, I will bring up a web page that I've got bookmarked. It is the INO Equities Stocks Indexes, and I look at particularly the U.S. dollar index. I've got a chart that looks at the U.S. dollar over the course of the past 1 year. And at the moment, the dollar is 76.273, and that is up from its most recent low. I think it dribbled just below 75 in its basket of comparison to other currencies around the world. And then I'll look at the weather. I will look at, and I use Weather Underground, which is abbreviated WUND on the iPhone. And I'll look and see what the forecast is for today, what the current temperature is, and it gives me a radar view of what's going on. And then I will look at, I guess depending on the day, I may bring up SportsTap or the PGA Tour application. I believe both of which of those are also free. Just to see what the teams did overnight or the golfers did on the previous day if I haven't already watched those events. And then if I'm going out, I may bring up Trapster to see if there are any live enforcement points in the area or on my route. And then of course if I'm going golfing, I'll bring up GolfShot GPS and type in the or select the course name to which I'm going golfing, and that keeps the statistics on my scores and strokes for the day. So I think those are the key applications that I will invoke in a day, and I encourage you to have a look at those too. Those are this week's tools in the crib, and like other tools I've given you so far, they're free. Little update now on banking in the United States. With 2 months to go, 9 banks and 153 offices and almost $20 billion in assets failed over the weekend. CIT, of course, is one of the biggest bankruptcies. But the FBOP Corporation, a bank holding company, lost 9 of its subsidiaries late last Friday to the FDIC. That'll cost the Deposit Insurance Fund an estimated $2.5 billion, which we've heard is now almost $8 billion in the red. That brings the tally for 2009 to 115 failed banks so far. This story comes from indexuniverse.com. Alpha Shares launches China All Cap Index. Alpha Shares has launched a new index comprising equities from Chinese companies of all capitalization sizes, the China All Cap Index. Late in October, Claymore Securities, which has already sponsored two funds based on AlphaShares indexes, will launch an ETF linked to the China All Cap Index. The Claymore AlphaShares China All Cap ETF, ticker symbol YAO. The index caps exposure of a single stock at 5% and a single sector at 35% to avoid overconcentration. The index is the first to provide exposure to the broad market of Chinese stocks by measuring the performance of all small, mid, and large cap investable publicly traded Chinese companies currently trading in New York and in Hong Kong. It does not, however, include China A shares, companies that are traded in the Chinese mainland stock exchanges and quoted in the local currency, and China B shares, those traded in the mainland and quoted in foreign currencies. The new offerings would face strong competition in that space. There are at least five other ETFs that offer direct exposure to China's broad stock market. Among them, PowerShares has the Golden Dragon Halter USX China, ticker symbol PGJ, which has mid-cap and small-cap companies comprising a big part of its portfolio. Another rival would be the SPDR, the Spider S&P China ETF, ticker symbol GXC, though it's mainly skewed to large cap names, as well as the giant iShares FTSE Xinhua China, which is ticker symbol FFXI, which is even more tilted to mega caps than GXC. And AlphaShares has two other ETF offerings with Claymore, the Claymore AlphaShares China Real Estate ETF, ticker symbol TAO, and the Claymore AlphaShares China Small Cap Index ETF, ticker symbol HAO. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll get, spin the wheel, roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Machine Show 167 is, once again, Jim Rogers. Well, Jim Rogers is well known in investing circles. He's written a book, a couple of books, Hot Commodities and Adventure Capitalist, I think was one of them, where he traveled all across the world and so forth. Well, what is his investment thesis? Do you know it? He is bullish on China, which we just talked about, the China ETFs. So I guess that would be one way to get involved in what Jim Rogers is bullish on. He is bearish on Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve printing a lot of dollars. He's very bearish on that. In fact, he says the dollar is screwed. He says, according to an article, again, at indexuniverse.com, he says, its status, the dollar's status as a reserve currency is teetering on a precipice, in Rogers' opinion, and he's not alone. In fact, so many people are selling dollars right now that he's sitting tight, waiting for a possible and ultimately unsustainable rally in order to exit the market. Of course, if it fails to rally and just drops again, Rogers says, I'll just have to panic and sell like everybody else. Of course, another one of Jim's theses, investment principles is that, along with his book Hot Commodities, along with the falling dollar, along with the rise of China as a global superpower, he believes the commodities will do well. He says there are 3 billion people in Asia, most of whom are aspiring to play the home version of the American Dream game show. And Index Universe says, let's face it, American society is largely about consumption. We like stuff. We buy it. We wear it. We eat it. We flaunt it. And sometimes even bedazzle it. Yeah, Google that. So there's a lot more consumption on the global. So that's a lot more consumption on the global level. Rogers notes that while consumption is expected to increase exponentially, not a lot of capacity has been added in the last few decades for a lot of commodities, meaning not a lot of new refineries have been built and not a lot of new resources have been discovered or excavated for a variety of commodities. In terms of oil, Rogers cites the fact that Saudi Arabia has not seen any new oil discoveries, but has consistently said for the past two decades that its reserves are at 260 billion barrels, in which time it has sold 60 billion barrels. He also points out that farmers are a rapidly disappearing species. So to sum up, that's a lot more people competing for diminishing resources, including the all-important energy and food. Basic supply and demand theory pretty much takes it from there. Rogers says commodities are the second largest asset class in the world, and they're the best anchor for your portfolio. Rogers says the typical lifespan of a commodities bull market is 18 to 20 years. We're currently in year 11 right now. Yeah, it could end tomorrow, but that whole supply and demand imperative could also extend this bull market beyond its typical time frame. When Rogers gave a speech recently, he took some questions. One questioner asked if the increased competition for resources might lead to war, and Rogers allowed that it was a possibility, though he hoped it would not come to that. He pointed out that when a rising power clashes with an established power, the result is usually war, and said that research consistently shows that resource shortages lead to war. So, sure, commodities shortages might start World War III, but if you invest in the commodities themselves, you might be at least in a decent financial shape when the shelling stops. Number four in his list of things is that the U.S. government bonds are the next big bubble. Well, would you lend money to us? Rogers says short-term bonds are probably okay, but he advises getting out of anything with a longer maturity. He calls it inconceivable that anyone would lend money to the U.S. for 30 years at the going rate, and notes that the U.S. was a creditor nation as recently as 1987. Now the U.S. is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, he says. And for bond portfolio managers, he had some very pointed advice. Get a new job. Rogers says, protect yourself. The underlying theme of his entire speech was that the world is changing, and here are some things you should know if you want to come out the better for it, and for your family members, clients, etc., to also come out for the better for it financially. Based on Rogers' observations, it seems recognizing that change is a key step, but so is adapting to it. And in Rogers' eyes, commodities are a good way to achieve this protection. No investment is certain, of course, but right now he thinks commodities look pretty darn good. And the Index Universe article concludes with the best comment of the night. Addressing one audience member's question, Rogers asked if the young man were an MBA. The questioner admitted to holding an MBA and was promptly told he should swap his MBA for an agriculture degree from Texas A&M. You should become a farmer, Rogers said. That's an old line for Rogers, but he added a new wrinkle. If you're not going to become a farmer, you should open the first Lamborghini dealership in Iowa, because with farmers closing in on extinction just as the world needs more food, that's probably what they'll be driving in a few years. Well, there you have it, show 167. Congratulations, Jim Rogers. You're the guru on Madman Machine. I want to thank you for joining me this week. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money. And it takes a mad golfing machine to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next time on show 168. Sometime probably between now and Christmas, I'm sure. If you have a question or a comment for me, you can email it to me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can call the very underutilized voicemail line, 571, 366-7121. I don't even remember the voicemail line. It's in the show notes. It's in the show notes at madmoneymachine.com. That's how underutilized it is. You can Twitter me, twitter.com/madmoneymachine, and I don't use that very much either. And there's probably another way to get in touch with me, which I don't remember at all. Email's probably the best. Just go for that. So until next time, have a good time, and I'll see you later.